on KGO 810.
Good evening from KGO 810. I'm still Peter B. Collins. I'll be here for another 2 hours all the way till 1 a.m. when the red-eye dudes from Dallas take over on most of this same station. 8080810 is our telephone number, and you're welcome to call the program. This hour, I want to talk about Facebook. And there are a lot of people on Facebook, and Facebook is going public this week. So there's a lot of buzz about the initial public offering, whether Zuck should get out of his t-shirt and put on a coat and tie to seduce the banksters. There's a lot to talk about. Jason Ben Levy joins me now in the studio here at KGO. He sent me a copy of his book, Too Much Magic, Pulling the Plug on the Cult of Tech. And we do try to penalize people for subtitle creep. But he goes on, secrets they won't tell you about your digital life. Jason, welcome.
Thank you.
So, a little bit about your background. You've been working in tech in Silicon Valley for a while?
Oh, yeah. Pretty much since the beginning of the PC era.
Uh-huh.
I came from kind of an advertising background, but I was also a secret techie kid who learned to program computers back when I was in high school, and that was a while ago. That's pre-Apple.
With the decks of cards?
With the decks of cards,
wow.
Yes, indeed.
I remember those guys in college.
And I was at San Francisco State, the only person both in the film department and sitting around with computers, which was a pretty odd thing to be doing back in those days.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of kept them in separate worlds. You didn't want the nerds to know that you were doing cool stuff, and you didn't want the cool people to know you were doing nerd stuff.
Uh-huh.
So consequently, you know, when computers switched from being big corporate things to being things that people could have themselves and do artistic things and creative things with, I was pretty good at being able to interpret, sit down with the engineers and understand what they were talking about and put it in some sort of creative form that the rest of the world could understand.
Yeah. And your book presents you as a knowledgeable, loving critic of the industry that you're a part of.
I think it's a fair criticism. I'm still totally a tech guy. I just don't really like some of the models, especially the business models that have emerged out of it, and some of the social behaviors that have come out of it. So the book really looks at both the social behaviors, how we're changing, and the companies behind that, and perhaps the reason why those social changes are taking place.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mother's Day dinner this evening, there were just three of us, and at one point, all three of us had our phones out, looking at them, checking email. We were not communicating with each other.
That's right. And that's one of the points of this, is that, you know, we have to... We're disadvantaged when we think that we can multitask, that what we wind up doing is doing more things less well. And we also lose the opportunity to take advantage of the ambient experience that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
And we lose a lot of richness of life by doing that. It's not uncommon to go along the Embarcadero here and see people walking, just looking at their iPhones, and not realizing that they're in this wonderful vista and there's a whole life going on around them.
But they're deep in contemplation about the workers at Foxconn who made their phone.
I think that may be it.
Well, Jason, I want to focus on Facebook, but before we get to that, toward the end of your book, I picked up an angle that really struck me as a different look. And you hastened to add, because I guess you heard me talking to Carell earlier,
right, I did.
That you're not against the iPad, but you described it differently than I had considered it. And what you basically say is that it's mostly a device aimed at consumption of internet-based material, including all those iTunes that Apple doesn't pay taxes on.
Right. But for iTunes and for magazines and things like that. What's interesting, though, is that the magazines aren't doing very well with it, that they thought they'd be able to sell subscriptions using the iPad as a delivery device,
yeah.
But no one seems to be subscribing. So
I read the New Yorker on my iPad,
right?
But I get it free because I subscribe to the paper magazine.
That's right. Same here.
Uh-huh.
And also with the New York Times, the same idea.
Right.
But they're having a very hard time actually getting people to pay for net content, which means that most net content is really advertising driven, which isn't really enough money for them. So they really are doing additional marketing things that we're not all that aware of, which is moving our names around as a commodity itself.
And the New York Times has changed its motto, all the news that fits your budget. And I hit the 20 limit last month. And then, of course, I do subscribe to the Times a few days a week, that Friday, Saturday, Sunday thing.
Right.
So I qualify for the freebie there.
Right.
But we are captive to this mentality that content on the web should be free, right?
I think so. But it comes at a price, which is that there is no free. That they have to create revenue out of something. Generally, we find most news organizations scaling back because they can't afford to do any kind of real coverage. And so people are also looking for the hot stories, like you were talking about. The terrorist bomber becomes item one, because it's easy to fit on a little iPad page, and it gets attention, and there's some pictures to go with it.
Yeah.
And so we keep narrowing the news as well. If you think about the experience of reading a physical newspaper and reading on the web, or reading on an iPad, which is even a smaller tableau, when you pick up a New York Times, you switch from page to page, and you find things that you had no idea about. That it's the most comfortable kind of browsing, that you're in this experience where there are 8 articles on a page, maybe 6 of which you don't know anything about.
Right.
And a headline can catch your attention, and you can expand what you know. If you're doing a web search to find your story, or if you're being sent down a very narrow channel on your iPad, you're not going to see as much stuff, or not see what you're not going to get is the ambient part of it. That is, that you're going to find what you are looking for. And there's a really big move in network business models to give you exactly what you're looking for.
Pander to me, baby.
Pander to me. And the problem is that we lose some of that ambient experience. And think about when you used to listen to a radio station, and the DJ would be playing something you know, and the DJ, back before they were cartridge machines or databases, the guy would think that, wow, this is a really interesting song, and maybe the people who like this other sound will like this too, and they'll go and play something new. And you'll go, wow, I didn't know that. And we were kind of open to having this ambient experience. When we go and use our iPod, we've got ourselves all programmed. We've only taken the stuff that we like. By chance, we might go and try something new.
Yeah.
Maybe someone on Facebook will go and offer you something new, and you can listen to that. But generally, we've lost this kind of wide view and are headed down a very narrow path.
Jason Ben Levy with us here on KGO 8080810. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can email me too, but I'd rather you call. My email is peter@peterbcollins.com, and you can jump on my Facebook page, Peter B. Collins Show. And I want to pick up on a couple of things you said there. First of all, the news experience. I still prefer to read a paper newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason is that I don't read every story, Jason, but I'm aware that there were demonstrations in Britain the other day.
Right.
I might just read the first paragraph. But when I go online, the whole effort is compressed into a page. And, you know, I can select from those stories, but I typically will just, you know, cherry pick 4 or 5.
Right.
Then as I'm reading one of those stories, there'll be some links on the margin that might distract me and say, oh, wow, the crispy critter in New Jersey. What's she up to now?
Right.
And so it is an experience that is much less satisfying and much less complete.
Right.
Because I appreciate that the editors of the Chronicle put together a full newspaper every day with news, both national and international, local. There's a sports section. There's an entertainment section. And I can get the full breadth of what they think is interesting and important on a given day.
Right.
When I go to their website, I'll spend about 10 or 15 minutes there, but I don't get nearly the breadth.
Right. And again, it's that ability to page through a much broader spectrum of news, again, that you are not already searching for. You are not searching. You are in that ambient experience.
Mm-hmm. And for example, on Friday, at first I kind of passed up the story about J.P. Morgan Chase and the missing $2 billion. and then when I got to the business section of the Times, there was a second story about it that gave me some context and perspective. And then I said, whoa. This is an important story.
Right. Right.
But you know, if you just use your electronic device, that kind of depth and emphasis may not actually happen.
Right. And there's a business reason for doing this, that they really want to gather enough information about you to create a profile of you to target the advertising.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about the New York Times, they have to go and do broad advertising because they've got these pages and who knows who's looking at those pages. Where once you start understanding who someone is, start profiling someone by checking and seeing what they are looking at.
Right.
Then you can start targeting the ads.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that problem is that we get ourselves into these really narrow types. Eli Pariser of MoveOn wrote a pretty interesting book about it, which in some ways my book covers too, which is the bubble effect or the filter bubble. That when you go and look at Google and when I go and look at Google, because of our past histories of looking at Google,
yeah,
we'll see different things.
Well, a little bit later this hour, I'm going to have a little fun because I've done this once before on KGO. I'm going to ask a couple of people to call in from different locations in front of a computer and load the same page, and we'll see which ads show up for different people in different places. Jason Ben Levy is with us. Lines are open at 80-88-10. If you'd like to call in, we'd like to talk with you. His book is called Too Much Magic. How can people get it, Jason?
Get it at Books Incorporated in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
They can also go to Diesel Books in Berkeley. They can get it at Amazon. They can get it, believe it or not, on the iTunes store.
As an ebook.
Nook, iTunes, and also on Kindle.
Mm-hmm.
They can get it at Amazon, physical book on Amazon, or from Powell's.com.
Wow. What a renaissance multi-platform guy. We'll continue in a moment. We're going to talk about Facebook and the information they collect on us as we are exchanging it with our friends. 11:16 now. I'm Peter B. Collins, KGO 810.
Get 10 minutes of nonstop local news at the top of every hour on the Bay Area's news and information station, KGO 810.
There, Carlos. No, not you, Carlo. I'm talking to Carlos playing the guitar. Carlo is pushing the buttons for us tonight and doing a fabulous job. Thanks, Carlo. And, of course, Brian Pelletier is taking your calls at 80-88-10. I'm Peter B. Collins. My guest is Jason Ben Levy. We're talking about his book, Too Much Magic. And this week is big for Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
The initial public offering goes out on Friday. And all kinds of people are licking their chops, including the state of California, broke as it is, hoping that the new Facebook millionaires will be paying lots of capital gains taxes and, of course, order new Teslas to help some local industries.
Right.
But behind all this, Jason, is a fascinating network of self-reporting, where basically, instead of having somebody come out and say, what's your favorite car and where do you like to eat and those kinds of things, we volunteer all this information.
Right.
We put it up and we're nominally sharing it with our friends and the privacy and security issues we might get into a little bit later.
Right.
But mostly the data collection by companies like Facebook, by Google, is astounding.
Yeah.
And most people do not have any clue.
Right.
Take a minute here to tell us what Facebook does with the information that they collect when I put up a post and tell my friends something.
Right. Well, again, we're back to the idea of like narrowing who people are, starting to establish a profile of who you are based on what you're interested in. Again, it's to go and target ads toward you, very much like you've seen on Google, that it starts to know you after a while.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly, I find some people say, gee, I really like that. I like to see what ads, the stuff that I'm already interested in front of me. But most of the rest of us feel kind of creeped out by it.
Yeah.
When we get to Facebook, it's really kind of interesting because the idea of a social network is actually a good idea. That it really has a positive thing that you can connect with friends who you've lost track of because, you know, you don't know what their phone number is anymore. Mm-hmm. Most email addresses are not intuitive things. They're all kind of crazy sets of letters.
They're the vanity plates that we never got from the DMV.
Right, exactly. and so the way that we connect with each other is that we have real names and we can go and connect on Facebook, which mm-hmm. is a great idea. You can find your friends from a long time ago, share interests, meet new people. Great. The problem is that we have one company doing it and one company keeping all the information to themselves.
Yeah.
And one company not being real above board about what they're doing. That should give us all a little bit of fright. In addition to the fact that they don't, you know, if you compare them to Apple, you know, there aren't too many people who use an Apple device and don't think, wow, this is really the way I like working. That they've done the hard work to make a really great application, to make a really good device. But when we get to Facebook, we have something that people actively dislike, and it keeps changing. And they keep changing the privacy policies, and you have to keep going and digging back in and changing those privacy policies mm-hmm. again. And the reason why it's very attractive, again, is to be able to sell advertising. And the crazy valuation on it doesn't make any real sense, because the point of Facebook is to be able to sell advertising. And a Facebook that's a $90 billion company would have to sell way more advertising than would even be available in the market. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of encouraged to see that this bubble is not like the one in the last decades, that a lot of companies that have come out and had an initial pop and then went right back down.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that people are a little bit more sane. But the idea of an initial public offering isn't really to raise money for these companies anymore. It's to get the early investors out with all their cash before the company goes south.
Mm.
Which is really, you know, if you look at the names on IPOs, you'll see all the same names that you saw in the first bubble and that you saw in the housing market. You'll find Goldman Sachs.
Meg Whitman?
You'll find Meg Whitman, right? You'll find Goldman Sachs. You'll find private investment groups. You'll find all the same personalities. And what they love to do is go and pump up something really big. It's the pump and dump.
Mm-hmm.
They make it a very exciting thing. And people think, wow, I'm going to get in on the ground floor.
And you're in, right? You got some shares?
No, absolutely not.
your Goldman Sachs account executive hasn't greased you, Jason? I am disappointed.
And so all the early investors, all the venture capital people are out really early, and walk away from it, just as they did through most of the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Not very many of them went down the rat hole when Yahoo went from 200 to 20. But the people who were the founders or the people who put up the initial public offering did very well.
I'm doctoring up my resume now to be the next CEO at Yahoo. I'm going to send it in tomorrow morning. Jason Ben-Levy with us. And in your book, you postulate the unified friend theory of social networking. Simply stated, the more commercial a social network application becomes, the less appealing it will be for users. Well, how come this hasn't caught up with Facebook? And you made an important point earlier that they are a monopoly. I mean, MySpace still exists, but nobody cares. Nobody uses it. And there is, you know, Google Plus is attempting to chase Facebook.
Right.
But that appears to be more, you know, Larry Page feeling, outpaced by a young Zuck.
That's right. I think that probably the best analog would be to compare Facebook to AOL, which is that it's the training wheels for everybody to get on board and understand what social networking is,
mm-hmm.
And that they're going to overplay their hand just like AOL did. When people get a little more sophisticated and more open methods evolve, in the beginning, most people who were using email were using AOL because it was something easy to use.
Right.
And then when they learned a little bit more, they learned that they can have an independent email account and they can pick their ISP
mm-hmm.
and they can pick all these services and they're not tied to anything. They can pick what browser they want to use.
Right. Interruption here. What does it say about people in 2012 who still use AOL?
I feel sorry for them.
I mean, it's free now, right? You don't have to pay for the privilege, but I guess they think that that address they have is so valuable that if they change it, they'll lose connections or something.
I think that's it, and also that there are a lot of people who are more marginal who came in that way and have not moved past there. But it's also frightening that AOL bought, you know, Time Warner at one point, and now is the master of Huffington Post.
Right.
So all of that wealth that was accumulated still has some power, even 12 years after their basically, you know, a history.
So Zuck goes into New York in his T-shirt and trademark jeans and talks to these investment bankers saying, we're going public. And what is the pitch that he makes to them?
The pitch is really about having a more intelligent way to do advertising. That is, instead of throwing up all these ads that cost a lot of money, that you're not, that you're reaching very few of the people you're looking for, you can target your ads very exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And so consequently, if you're paying per click, that your clicks will be much more effective than just throwing out a banner ad, which some people consider old school.
Yeah. And how much information do they have? In other words, if I'm an advertiser and I see you're wearing a Steve Jobs, not the turtleneck, but a black
I used
pullover
to wear that until he started wearing them, then I had to switch.
Okay, what if I want to sell, black crew neck pullovers? How do I know that that's something that Jason Ben Levy likes?
Right. If I'm an advertiser, how would I know that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it would unless I said something about my black turtlenecks.
Or what about your picture? If your picture on Facebook shows you the way I see you right now.
I'm not sure that the picture recognition is as good as that. It is for faces.
Uh-huh.
That is, that they are actively going through there and combing through and doing facial recognition. Mm-hmm. So they can match who is associated with who. And basically that people become the salesman to each other. So if you have a friend who likes something and perhaps that friend gets a promotional offer from a merchant through Facebook, and then that person recommends it to their friends. So the idea is to turn your friends into salespeople for you. So everyone kind of becomes an Amway salesman at this point.
Jason Ben Levy with us. Now, we're going to take a break in a moment for the news, but I want to empower some people. So if you are sitting near a computer, not driving, but sitting near a computer, I don't care what kind, I'd like you to call in right now at 808-810-808-0810. And during the break, I'm going to conspire with Jason, and we're going to figure out which website we want you to pull up. And I'd like to hear from somebody in Washington State, in Oregon, in Silicon Valley, and in Southern California. And I'd like you to mix it up, not all guys, because they do know the difference between different users. And we're going to ask you to load a specific web page, and then we're going to ask you to describe what ads you see on that page. You got it? 808810. If you're computerized, give us a call right now, and we'll have a little fun with this in the next few minutes here on KGO 810.
So, Jacqueline.
Yes, Mom?
I wanted to talk to you about something, and... Oh, wait. Hold on. I just got a text. Oh, there's another one. Wow. Busy, busy me. So, anyway...
Oh, wait, Mom. I just got a message. My friends keep commenting on my comment. Oh, there's another one. So many comments on my comment.
Oh, I can't wait to watch TV tonight. Playoffs!
Hey, guys, check out my new video game. Pew, pew!
Wait.
Mom, what?
Huh? What?
What'd you say? Wait a second, what?
This weekend, unplug. Take your family to the forest. There's nothing in the world like experiencing nature firsthand. Trees, paths, bluebirds, streams. Getting closer to nature can get you closer to your family. To find the forest nearest you, go to discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
When it matters to you, Ron Owens is talking about it. Weekdays 9 to noon on KGO 810.
Peter B. Collins with Jason Ben Levy this evening here on KGO 810, the American Idiots, doing what we can to help you understand what goes on when you cough-up information at Facebook or other websites. And, Jason, I have a podcast, and I'll plug it right now. People can find it at the website they named after me, peterbcollins.com.
Clever.
And it's been very interesting. I've been doing it for 3 years, and I've developed an audience all over the world. iTunes has been great at introducing me to people, and I installed a paywall to help generate some revenue.
Right.
And there is resistance. It's $5 a month. I'm even putting in a $1 24-hour free pass because people do seem to be resistant to paying for their content.
Right.
And so I'm conducting my own experiment there. But we got a couple of callers here to work with us, and I'm going to put both of them on at the same time. This is Susan in Sonoma. Hi, Susan. Susan, are you with us?
I'm with you. I can hear you.
Great. And I'm not going to hang up on you, I promise. Here is another Jason in San Jose. Hi, Jason.
Yes, hello. It's Peter B. and Jason.
Thank you.
Hi, Jason.
Thanks for being with us, both of you. Now, can I ask you each to load the New York Times website? It's nytimes.com.
Right.
And we're going to see if you're looking at the same ads that I'm getting here on this computer that all the hosts use at KGO. So this has some mixed cookies. And Jason Ben Levy, tell us a little bit about cookies while our listeners are loading those pages.
Sure. So cookies basically are persistent little records of where you have been. Every time your browser lands on something, the website that you land on goes and deposits little bits of information on your browser. Mm-hmm. And then when you travel to the next website, that website can go and read the places that you've been. Mm-hmm. So you keep a little trail of cookie crumbs behind you wherever you go, even though there are ways to turn off some of that, so to give yourself some privacy.
Yeah. Okay, Jason in San Jose, on the New York Times site, at the very top with the masthead that says New York Times, what ad do you see?
I see shop now at markjacobs.com.
All right, me too. What about you, Susan?
I do not see an ad.
Oh, you just have the New York Times and there's nothing on that same horizontal plane?
Just the date.
Really? Interesting. All right, then for me, there is a large banner ad just below that and before the news stories start. Susan, what do you see there?
Below the title of the paper?
Yes.
Are all the stories in a photo?
There's no ad between the New York Times masthead and the picture of a woman?
No, there's just a search bar.
Oh.
You might have ad blocker.
Yeah. Do you have a gizmo?
I very well might. My husband set up my computer for me.
Okay. And Jason, what do you see?
I see Citi or Citibank.
Okay. And do you have the little tiny ad for ING Direct?
I do, with the little lion there, the little orange lion.
Right, yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
Now, Susan and Jason, both scroll down. On the right-hand side of my page, under the story about a Broadway musical, I have an ad for Federated. Do you see that? It's a little one, and mine reads, "Our search for income knows no boundaries." So on the right-hand side,
yeah,
about...
I see the ad for Federated.
Okay. Susan, do you have that ad?
No, apparently all my ads are blocked, which is fine with me.
Well, you're setting a good standard. Now, Jason, Jason Ben Levy,
right.
How do we block these ads?
There's little applications that are available for most web browsers, and you just have to go and select them as either an extension or an add-on or a plug-in. Mozilla browser has one that's pretty easy. Firefox has one.
Right.
Safari has one. I imagine that there are some for Internet Explorer, not that I use it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly there are other ones like SeaMonkey and other ones that have it built in.
Okay.
So there are ways to do this, and at least you will not see the ads, but it doesn't mean that you are not being tracked.
Mm-hmm. Susan, I'm going to let you go because you don't have any ads to tell us about.
All right, I'm useless. Sorry.
Well, I didn't say that, but thank you very much for calling. And Jason in San Jose, you stay with us, and let's see if we can get another caller. I'm still looking for somebody from out of the Bay Area. So if you're listening in Oregon this evening or Washington State, have mercy on me. Give me a call and look at your computer, and let's see what ads you're looking at. Jason, the caller, now I'd like you to load the page atimes.com. Just the letter A, T-I-M-E-S, This is one of my favorite websites. It's an independent journalism group called Asia Times, and they feature my worldwide favorite reporter, Pepe Escobar. And I want people, even if you don't look at the ads, go to there and read Pepe's work, because he is fabulous.
Let's see. So I'm using Firefox, and it's telling me that it prevented a pop-up. Should I allow that pop-up?
Yes, allow the pop-up.
Just this once.
All right, allow pop-ups from Atons.
Okay. So, under the masthead, next to the word front page, there is a partial ad that goes, it favors the right margin. Do you see that one?
I see one from Embassy Suites.
Aha. Uh-huh. Now we get a difference. Being served an ad called Snorg Tees, and there is a full-figured woman filling out a T-shirt on the right here. And then underneath it is buying a small business, intensive. It's some seminar in New York put on by Babson. Do you see that?
No, I want the full-figured woman here.
Okay, how about Microsoft Office 365? Is that on yours?
No, I'm seeing one from AT&T and Google Offers and Disneyland. Disney Parks.
Oh.
I'm getting completely different.
You certainly are. So, Jason Ben Levy, what does this tell us? Why does Jason in San Jose, just 45 miles away, get so much different than what I see on a website that's based in China somewhere?
Right, because what's happening is that the ads are being served to his profile from places he's been before, things that are on his cookies, that when you land on that site, it examines your cookies and sees what you're interested in it and serves you with the ads that make sense for you.
Uh-huh. And if I click on this Microsoft ad, will they'll pay a nickel to...
It depends on what the arrangement is. Usually a click-through generates revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Most people pay for click-throughs. You can also just pay for banners and pay for, you know, the space of being a banner up there, which happens too. But the good news is that this is the ad model isn't working all that well. That banner advertising and click-through advertising isn't working all that well, which is why companies are really interested in getting to know you even better to have you self-identify and provide even more information through something like Facebook.
Yeah. Jason in San Jose, what's your comment on all this tonight? And will you please be my friend on Facebook?
Well, absolutely. I think I already am. I'm slightly paranoid about it. You know, I've been following this for a long time, and it's of concern. I routinely clear out my cookies, and then for whatever it's worth, I click on random banner ads from time to time so that when I do get followed...
That's actually recommended in Jason's book.
Right.
I try to...
He says, mess with them.
A false profile, so...
Right.
You know, so you know, although I'm sure their data mining and their, you know, statistical methods are pretty good at ferreting that out, but
I would recommend to throw them off Martha Stewart Living.
I did click on Cafe Escobar here, and it popped up a Publisher's Clearinghouse pop-up ad.
Really?
As soon as I clicked the link.
So. Is that on the article "Long Live Our Gulf Bastards"?
No, I just clicked on the little the best of Pepe
the
Escobar.
The best of. Okay, I'm going to try that right now. Oh, I got a pop-up for, what the heck is this? Would you go back to school if you qualified for a grant? Yeah, because I don't have any student loans, and I feel left out. All right, Jason, thanks for calling in, thanks for being my friend on Facebook anyway. We'll return with Jason Ben Levy. And if you have a call, a question, or a comment, get on the line now, 8080810. I'll check my email during the break and see if anybody has messaged me. And if you send me a text message, I'm going to ignore it because I have to pay for those.
That's right.
I don't have a plan that gives me unlimited texting. 11:45 now. This is KGO 810.
When you read about it, it's history. When you hear it, that's news on KGO 810.
Some bumper music. music for Fossils this evening. I'm Peter B. Collins with Jason Ben Levy here on KGO 810. And the last time I really felt like a fossil, Jason, I was speaking to a group of graduating students at Sonoma State University. This was fully 2 years ago. And I really blundered. I said, hey, anybody here got Facebook fatigue? And they looked at me like, you dinosaur, you know, you just are so out of it. And this one rather attractive and bright young lady stood up and talked down to me. And she said, you know, she said, when I communicate with my friends, it's either a text message on my phone or through Facebook.
Right.
She said, email? That's for my parents and other old people.
Now, what's interesting about that is that when you think about moving away even from phone calls as a principal thing, that we lose a lot of nuance between people and speaking and being able to have a give and take. And it's kind of interesting that younger people are moving toward these forms of communications that are very brief and don't have as much emotional content necessarily. And, well, and you're not hearing the other person reacting to it.
Right. And I don't pry in my son's communications, but occasionally I'll be looking over his shoulder while he's on his computer. And the IMs going back and forth are at the level of grunts. I mean, it's not like these are, you know, detailed conversations like, what's up? Oh, I'm here. Yeah. Online? Yeah. Gonna watch TV tonight? No. and so, I mean, it's a different generation, and I don't want to further fossilize myself.
Well,
but it is different, and your point is that there are far fewer calories of human exchange.
Right. And again, that they're not really interactive in the same way. We get an awful lot of nuance from people being able to hear them, like with the inflection in their voices. And that's starting to get distilled out of there. Again, because so many, especially people in teens and 20s, are using text instead of actually calling each other on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another phenomenon too, that if you watch people in their teens and 20s, they don't plan things quite the same way because they've got this continual buzz connection to each other that they have to, don't really make a plan and say, okay, we're all going to meet at the clock tower at 12 o'clock because
they're waiting to see whose parents are out and who's got the better liquor cabinet.
Well, I think every generation has done that.
Well, let me ask you about this because I think people now understand that even though we're trying to regulate and restrict it, that prospective employers do look at resumes to CEO of Yahoo knows that now.
Oh, yes.
But also they are asking people to cough up their password for Facebook.
Right.
And I consider that a huge invasion of privacy.
Right.
But I got a factoid that there's something like 86 million photographs that are now up on Facebook. Each one of them has a unique URL.
Right.
And even though I posted it 6 years ago and have forgotten completely about it, if somebody can discover the unique URL of that photograph,
right,
it's still on the Facebook server.
Right. It's on the Facebook server, and it can be to whoever, when Facebook eventually goes under or is subsumed by some other company, who knows who owns the rights to that at that point. Again, if you had clicked the right privacy setting, perhaps you would have some control over it, but there's really no legal basis. We've had this interesting decade or two where content owners, that is movie studios and record companies, have been growing their rights leaps and bounds, that having copyrights, that corporate copyrights that last for 95 years. And yet we've had no real advances in any kind of consumer protection or privacy protection since the 1970s. That there is no law that says that an employer can't compel you to give up your Facebook information.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jason, in your book, I want to give you credit. We don't really have time to talk about it, but you go on at some length about the problems with electronic voting.
Right.
And the very serious issues. You have a great section about the presidential vote count in Ohio in 2004, which was counted on Republican-controlled servers in Tennessee.
That's correct.
Which led me to conclude, and there is a guy who did a forensic analysis, that John Kerry actually won Ohio by 150,000 votes.
Right.
And so I believe firmly that that election was stolen.
Oh, yeah.
But there are other issues here that we need to look at in this wired world. So what warnings would you like to issue in terms of the use of these sites, the sharing of personal information, and how can we best still participate and not be left out while protecting our privacy and other interests?
Right. Well, I think that the main way that we do that is start moving these functions away from being owned by monopolies and by private companies. That electronic voting might conceivably be an okay solution if we all know what's happening inside the black box, if it's transparent to everyone instead of being secret code.
Mm-hmm.
That Facebook or a social network might be a good thing if it's an open thing, just like you have email that goes to a server, that you pick your server, you pick your email client, your choice what you want to do to be able to have that interaction instead of the old AOL model where they controlled everything. So if we move to models that disintermediate these major large companies that have put themselves in the middle of the process, that we can conceivably take advantage of the goodness of technology, but that it's all under our watchful eye and that we make decisions about the stuff ourselves.
Now, I'm a sharp critic of the national surveillance state, and in many cases, we are offering up the information to the government without a warrant or even one of these silly national security letters.
Right.
An example, recently, two 20-something kids in Britain were tweeting to each other as they got ready to take a vacation to the United States. And one of the tweets said, we're going to party really hard. We're going to destroy America.
Right.
When they got to Los Angeles, they were met by Homeland Security and put on the next plane to London.
Right. And just think how dumb the sifting was to take the destroy America message and treat that seriously. But I'm more disturbed about there's this point where government and business kind of meets, and they're kind of both mutually serving each other.
Mm-hmm. I think it's called fascism.
It's called fascism generally, and we see it in China, where American companies are selling all the tools that the Chinese government needs to sift through. That you'll find people in Silicon Valley and very wealthy people in Silicon Valley extolling freedom and waving the flag and talking about how free markets will free everyone.
And then they sell the backdoor devices that allow governments to spy on people, or in areas of the Arab Spring, to shut down networks.
Exactly. And it's, you can't be serving both. You can't be screaming about freedom and being a libertarian. And it's not just about commercial stuff. It's not just about the freedom to sell stuff. It's about real human rights.
Mm-hmm.
And for all the hoopla about the Arab Spring, we've seen very little actually emerge out of it.
Right.
Because the same people who are powerful are still powerful. The same people who control the networks are still the same people who control the networks.
Last year, my friend Ray McGovern went to a news conference held by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. And to show his disapproval, at one point he stood up and turned his back to her with a T-shirt that had a message. He was hustled out of the room and manhandled, bruised by the security folks who ejected him. Her speech was about freedom of expression in other parts of the world.
Oh, yeah. No, I know about that speech. And at the same time, they were still encouraging company to sell hardware, to sell software and hardware to these countries. I mean, China at this point would not have been able to build the Great Firewall of China without companies in the South Bay mm-hmm. providing them the technology.
All right, PIPA and that other one, we now have CISPA, right?
Right.
Well, and this is legislation that on the face of it is supposed to protect copyrighted material so that I can't pirate a clip from the Daily Show and pass it around.
Right, that's more like SOPA was that.
Okay.
And SOPA was really about Hollywood reaching out to want to clamp down on intellectual property rights. Some of it is justifiable. That is mm-hmm. that someone who is a creative person who produces a movie or does music is entitled to have the rights to that. And so to some degree, you want to agree with that. The other side of that is that they would use very little of that to go and shut down everything, that mm-hmm. it's draconian. The reason why SOPA died wasn't because of online activism. It's because Hollywood went up against Silicon Valley and they didn't agree. I think that on things like CISPA, which are happening right now, we're not finding Hollywood and Silicon Valley disagreeing, and it's kind of frightening because we don't have anybody on our side.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate your book, Jason, and thanks for stopping by. I enjoyed our conversation tonight. The book is Too Much Magic, Pulling the Plug on the Cult of Tech, and the further subtitle, Secrets They Won't Tell You About Your Digital Life. And I think you ought to read it because there's a lot of good information in there.